And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Wickles Pickles. Once again, this is your host, Clint Lamb, sitting here once again with Brett Hudson. How are you doing this morning, Brett?
I'm sad, man. I am sad that my fall Saturdays won't start by watching Iowa and Indiana punt 37 times in a 60-minute football game. I'm sad that I won't be drinking coffee at 1 a.m. watching Cal and Arizona State play a gloriously stupid football game. I am sad that that's how my fall Saturdays are going to be so different. I might actually get some decent sleep on a Saturday night, which feels just so foreign. But that's the environment we live in today, I suppose.
Man, I don't know if you were like me. If this was just a me thing, but when all this stuff started breaking, you know, with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the decisions that they were, you know, kind of kicking around that they were probably going to make, we didn't know, you know, people were reporting that they were expecting all college football to be canceled by the end of the week, but just having an input from literally everybody from every different direction, my head was spinning. I don't know about you, but it was just – it was a wild time last week, or I guess earlier this week. It just – man, it feels like last week. But starting this past weekend and then carrying over to today, we're recording this on Thursday. It's been a wild week. What about for you?
I don't know, man. I tried to take Twitter with, like, a pound of salt. Yep. for the last few days just to – make sure I'm getting something that's reasonably thought out and well reported and all that. I will say this, though. When the Big Ten and the Pac-12 made their decisions, that was the first time since all of this started in March that I actually contemplated the possibility of the SEC not playing football this year. Like, it had never even entered my headspace as a possibility until that happened. And we're going to get into the nitty gritty and the details of it later on. And I think it's pretty clear that the SEC is going to exhaust every option possible to play some, if not all 10 games this fall. But for the first time, and I don't know if you felt this way too, but for the first time since all of this happened in March when the basketball tournaments got canceled and baseball got postponed and ultimately canceled, and the same for softball. For the first time since all of that, I actually contemplated the possibility that the SEC would not play football this fall.
Yeah, and that's actually a very interesting point because I'm right there with you. And there was just, you know, in the back of your mind, you know that it's possible, but you just don't see a world where, you know, the SEC, and really I was thinking about it from the perspective of, you know, pretty much every major conference. I didn't even think the Big Ten and the Pac-12 would cancel. I thought at the very least they get into the season, and if you started having, you know, some of the outbreak problems like Major League Baseball has had with the Miami Marlins or the St. Louis Cardinals, if you had that kind of situation with a college football team, in a major, really, even if it wasn't in a major Power Five conference, but I think they would probably need to be Power Five just because, you know, a lot of the bigger schools can say, well, we test a lot more regularly, we're not having that problem. But if you would have seen that sort of outbreak, that's where I could have seen a conference calling it quits. But to kind of, before you even kind of get into things, right, is, you know, when they were releasing schedules and doing all the things that they were doing, when, you know, the SEC had just released their schedule last Friday, I believe, and then the very next day, there starts being rumors about the Big Ten is planning to cancel, Pac-12 is expected to follow suit. They're expecting, you know, some people were reporting that they were expecting everybody to follow suit by the end of the week. To me, I'm a big why guy, and that's where I was at with when that started getting released. I was like, what in the world could have possibly have happened? And we actually might be in a situation where college football doesn't happen because the people who are reporting it, and I'm not saying that they're wrong, they're getting information from sources, and those sources could have been wrong, or those sources could have been speculating and they were just relaying that. So I'm not trying to attack anybody. But I just, to me, when I trusted what they were reporting, but I was like, I don't understand how we got here. And that's what was probably the weirdest part for me was, I mean, and I guess we'll get into the viability. You know, how viable do we think a spring season could possibly be for the Big Ten? And if other major conferences went in that direction, do we think it's possible? But in my head, the way that I've kind of viewed it up to this point, and I haven't done a ton of exploring, it's been a lot more surface level, but I was like, I just don't think the spring's an option. So if it doesn't happen in the fall, you're looking at a situation where you're not having college football for, you know, close to 2 years, because, you know, college football wrapped up early January of 2020 this year. You might not have it until, you know, the latter part of 2021. It was very strange to me that how everything transpired, but I completely agree with you. I just, this entire time, it, you know, you hear bad news, you see it with, and I've been monitoring other sports because of my other job with the radio station. I cover everything. So I've been paying a lot more close attention to sports in general. And when you see stuff like with Major League Baseball and the struggles that they were having, guys sneaking out of the NBA bubble, you start to think, man, if college football is having any of these same issues, I do worry, but you don't actually think it's going to get canceled. So I completely agree with you there.
Well, to your point about the sharp about face with the Big Ten, where they're releasing their schedule 1 week and canceling it, or postponing it to the spring, I guess, the week after, a lot of the reporting out there has been because it is because they got new medical information, or they're uncertain in their medical information. And the new medical information would be the reported cases of myocarditis, which is the inflammation of the heart muscle. And I'm not criticizing the Big Ten or the Pac-12 for their decisions if players having myocarditis was part of their decision-making process. Because if you've got reason to believe that COVID-19 is enlarging the hearts of 18 to 22-year-old elite athletes, then that disease is serious enough to take an action like this. But I think this goes for everything about the virus. I don't think we know enough about it to say anything definitively. And what I mean by that is college physicals are obviously good. Like they do them once a year. And I mean, the yearly physicals for the coaching staff caught a heart issue for Steve Sarkisian, which is why he had surgery earlier this summer. So there's that. But there are always things that are caught in the physicals at the NFL combine that are not caught at the college level. The best example was a couple years ago when Montez Sweat was coming out of Mississippi State, a huge defensive line prospect. He went to the NFL combine, and they discovered during medical tests that he had a possible heart condition. Like he started his career. Where did Montez Sweat start his career? I think he started at Michigan State.
Yes, it was Michigan State.
Colan Community College in Mississippi, and then had 2 years at Mississippi State. So there was a lot of medical screening in there that never caught what could have been a heart abnormality, but they catch it at the combine. So what I'm saying is the college level medical testing is good, but it's not as good as it possibly can be for a lot of reasons. So that being the case, it's hard to draw a direct line from myocarditis in college athletes to COVID-19 and make it a direct line between the two. And it's also hard to do that for most things with the virus. Like we know, here's a list of things we know about the virus. It can cause lung damage. And in some cases, it can spread asymptomatically. We know social distancing slows the spread. We know masks slow the spread. That's more or less it that we know for sure about COVID-19. And that's wildly frustrating for people who argue about the virus on Facebook. But it's also incredibly difficult for people like the Big Ten commissioner and conference commissioners around to make informed, intelligent decisions on what they need to do with their seasons. So that kind of goes to the sharp turn that the Big Ten made And I do wonder if I'm not mistaken, both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 had announced their schedules to start in early September, right?
Yes.
I knew the Big Ten did that. I thought the Pac-12 did, but I wasn't 100% sure. The SEC obviously didn't. The SEC pushed their schedule back 3 weeks, I think. So if the season goes on as it's currently scheduled, the first games will happen on Saturday, September 26th, as opposed to Saturday, September 5th. And I think that gives the SEC a useful window of opportunity to better understand the impact of the student bodies returning to campus on the spread of COVID-19 through your campus and through your college town. Let's be realistic. Students coming back to campus is going to cause an increase in COVID-19 cases, whether they got it in their hometowns and they bring it back here, and just by their own presence they have COVID-19 in Tuscaloosa as opposed to having it in their hometown, or they find a way to spread it asymptomatically on campus, so they spread it without knowing it, and then your numbers increase that way. The spread of COVID-19 on a college campus is going to increase when students come back. So if you started a football season on September 5th, just roughly a week or so after students come back to campus, since this virus can take a 14-day or more incubation period and symptoms can take forever to show up, if they show up at all, that amount of time between students coming back to campus and a football game on September 5th, you don't even know what your COVID-19 situation is, much less an understanding of how it's spreading and what can be done to slow it. When you do see, when you start football on September 24th, you're giving yourself a 4 to 5 week cushion to better understand those things. So I understand the merits of having your season start when it was supposed to, because then in theory, if they had played the games on September 5th and things kind of backtracked later in September, early in October, it gave them more weeks on the back end in late November and early December to reschedule some games and find a way to play those games that suddenly became impossible in mid to late September. I understand the merits of that, but I think the SEC doing it the way they did it gives themselves at least a chance of coming to grips with the impact of the student body returning to campus relative to the spread of COVID-19, and maybe giving themselves a chance to realistically not contain it, but maybe get it to a workable phase where their athletes can do their thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the SEC, at least in my opinion, is doing. And they've kind of said as much. I mean, you get students back on campus, you have a couple of week period to kind of try to get things under control, or at least see where things are at, is, I guess, the better way to put that. And if things are, seem like there's an increase or whatever, what can you do to try to get those cases going down, get things? Because what we've seen is in every sport, just about, when they've tried to return, there's been hiccups in the process. And so bringing students back, you would have to think that it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be worse than that, because they're having hiccups in sports where they're trying to keep their thumb over a lot of what's going on and kind of managing things. And you're still seeing a little bit of not trial and error, but they're having to tweak some things on how they can get things under control. And the NBA kind of perfected it. The MLS was another one that kind of came back. I think they even had a couple of teams early on in the season who weren't able to participate because of COVID problems. And now they've from everything I've heard, have things under control. Right. So it gives them time before you're having to actually play football, say, okay, how is the students returning impacting not only the student body, but our student athletes? And then we can try to figure out, okay, can we make this happen? And anybody that thinks we're in the clear as far as playing a season this year, there's still a lot of obstacles that have to be overcome. I still think the Big 12 right now is somewhat on the fence. They want to continue, but I don't think it's going to take a whole heck of a lot to push them in the other direction. So you have to monitor them. It's going to be important. Oklahoma in particular has said, weeks 2 and 3 are probably the two most important weeks as far as fall camp are concerned. based off of, you know, us trying to figure out where we are with the spread of it when we're actually practicing. And they're heading into week two, or they were supposed to be. Now, I think that they actually sent their players home, if I'm not mistaken, for now. So that might be a little bit delayed. But there's a lot that can happen. And what I learned from this last weekend is, regardless of how things look, things can change in an instant. But what's been odd to me, and you can say this about the SEC and the ACC and conferences like that too, but we keep getting, you know, the medical people who were behind the decisions or helping make the decisions to cancel the Big Ten and the Pac-12. They're not really telling you how they reached that conclusion. They're just bringing up this myocarditis. Is that how you say it?
Myocarditis, yes.
Yeah, myocarditis stuff. They've brought that up. That's been a talking point. But you've got a lot of just kind of not sound bites, but just headline types of things. Like, there was just no way we could continue on with a season. Okay, well, can you tell us why that was? And don't just point to that. Explain to us kind of what happened to lead you there. And on the flip side, the SEC is saying, based off of everything we're hearing, they're giving us the full go. We're good to go. Okay, well, how are you reaching that conclusion? We're not getting the behind-the-scenes stuff that I feel like we kind of deserve, but we're probably not going to get, and that makes things a lot more difficult. It's hard for me to say, oh, I'll tell you right now, the SEC is good with playing a season. They're going to be fun, because I don't know what's happening, you know, from a medical standpoint behind the scenes, because we haven't really been told. So that's super interesting. My question to you, and here's the thing, I want to be careful with this because people are very much in attack mode, regardless of how you feel. But I'll put it this way. Do you think the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 are making the right call by being patient and trying to figure out, or trying to push this thing as far or as close to September 26th as possible to have the best educated guess on whether they should play a season or not?
Before I answer your question, to your point about medical officials and having transparency from them, I didn't watch it. I think the Pac-12 may have had a medical official on their announcement, but I know the Big Ten didn't. The Big Ten just had their commissioner, Kevin Warren, on Big Ten Network to explain the decision. Kevin Warren is not an epidemiologist. Kevin Warren is not trained medically in any way, shape, or form. He was an NFL front office employee from 1997 to 2019 when he took over as the Big Ten commissioner, replacing Jim Delaney. Like, he has no expertise in this, but clearly they're talking to experts who have the expertise. So why wouldn't you use those people to publicly explain your decisions? I realize calling for transparency in today's political climate is not necessarily a fruitful venture. But that doesn't mean we're not going to try, because that's kind of our jobs. Now, to your question about if the SEC, ACC, and by proxy the Big 12 are making the right call here, it depends on the context. If you're looking at the decision from the context of the league, there's a lot of money to be made playing football. So, and playing football in the fall. So holding out for every last bit of hope you can possibly get to get some college football games on television, great call. Undeniable great call. Like a nine-digit call and hundreds of millions of dollars that are on the line there. So in terms of the conferences, great call. In terms of the teams, the players, and the coaches, it's tricky because I've heard from coaches of non-football sports at Alabama and otherwise who, if they were to have their seasons ripped away, be it now or closer to the season, it would be hard to not feel cheated because they did all of the summer workout stuff, and football is more impacted by this than most others since football players got back to campus first. But they were doing all of their summer workouts in June and July and going above and beyond for the sanitation protocols and the distancing protocols and the mask protocols. and everything that, and the quarantining when necessary, and everything they had to do to hold their summer workouts in as safe as possible environment relative to the virus. They did all of that, and then they started to get onto the field with the ball involved and a little bit of coaching and running and all of those things. And they did all of those things as safely as possible with the virus and stopping its spread at the front of their minds. And in the cases of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 conferences that were starting preseason practice to start their seasons in early September, the SEC hasn't gotten to that yet. That's not scheduled to start until Monday, August 17th, depending on when you listen to this. They've done all of those practices in a COVID mindful state. They tried to maintain social distancing whenever possible, the sanitation and everything else, to do all of those things and then just have the season ripped away after months of working to play during a pandemic. That's brutal. That's brutal for those players, those coaches, that support staff, and everyone involved. It's brutal for them to do all of this work during a pandemic for months, and just to get so close to it, to have it all wiped away, that's brutal. The flip side of that is, how much more brutal would it be if that season got ripped away 3 days before the first game as opposed to 3 weeks before the first game? So it's a tricky situation in terms of doing right by your players, coaches, support staff, and otherwise. The money is obviously, you do everything you can to get that paycheck, but if you're going to try and do right by your players, coaches, and support staff, it's very, very tricky. And I don't know that there is a right answer. Is that right?
It's tough, man. But yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. Because there's so much uncertainty on both sides, and you have to think, there's going to be two ways of looking at this. If you go ahead and cancel, if you're the Big Ten,
yeah,
if you're the Pac-12, and you go ahead and cancel now, and you get in and you let the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 get into a season, they're not really having issues. They're able to keep things under control. There's going to be positive cases. That's unavoidable. But they're keeping those to a minimum, and they're able to make their way through a season, then you have to wonder yourself, could we have made it work too? And you know that there, you can sit there and play the what if game all day. There's going to be a lot of people who will. There's going to be a lot of people who say, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I feel like that's, you know, we made the right call based off of the information that we had at the time, and we'd make it again. But you got to think from a fan's perspective, because right now we're already seeing there's been a couple of recruits who have pulled out as far as Big Ten commitments. Right. I don't know necessarily that they're related. I think they are. I could be wrong. I don't know that anybody's come out and said it's because they're not having a season. But there's been a couple. You've got potentially some players leaving. How realistic that's going to be, I don't know, just because, you know, there's only so many spots right now available on other teams. And if you're playing at a major university like Ohio State, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, Alabama's only got, you know, probably three or four starting spots up for grabs. I don't want to transfer after being a starter on my own team to being a backup. So that I've also kind of been one to say, I think that if you allow this mass exodus of players from the Big Ten to the Pac-12 and allow them to transfer and become eligible, I think that's going to close the talent gap quite a bit, because you got to think, if you're looking at Auburn and you're looking at the fact they lost four of their five starters on their offensive line, three of their four starters on the defensive line, most of their secondary, if you're playing one of those three positions, you're saying, you know, Alabama's right now, they have four of their five spots locked up on the offensive line. Auburn's got four or five. I'm going to transfer to Auburn, or Florida State, or some of these other programs that's got a lot of, you know, and Florida State might be a bad example right now with what they got going on. But the point being, I think the talent gap closes from the top to the bottom and anywhere in between if you allow that to happen. But with the Big Ten and what they got going on, as far as that potentially being a concern, We're already talking about, laying off the entire athletic department in some instances. the sports that are going to be affected if you aren't able to have a spring season, which I still think is a huge long shot. It might be possible. I don't want to completely rule anything out. You're going to have to come up with something better than anything that's been shown to me, or you need to stop preaching the health and safety of your players, which is BS in my opinion anyways, but that's beside the point too. Point being, you can look at this situation and as a fan and say, man, I just witnessed the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 make it through an entire season, didn't have deaths, didn't have, you know, a whole lot of problems, and here we are, we've been sitting at home all season, not getting to watch our favorite team that we've become super passionate about, and that's going to upset a lot of people because, you know, the program is not just going to be affected for 2020. It's going to be a lot further, I think several years, that it could end up affecting some of these teams, and to know that you could have made it through, that's the other thing. Did you call it too soon? But like you said, there's also the flip side to say, you know, what the Big Ten has done is let their players know as soon as possible. They didn't have them continuing to practice and with the expectation that they're going to be playing a season all the way up until the first game and then say, you know what, we got to pull the plug. We can't make this happen. So, yeah, there's flip sides to both.
Should we go ahead and run through the complications of a spring season since the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are already going to try it, and in the worst-case scenario, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 follow suit?
Absolutely, and that's something that I think we'll take a quick break, but when we do come back, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about. It's just the, you know, how viable is a spring season, at least, you know, based off of the information that we currently have. So stick around for that. This is the Bama Beat Podcast brought to you by Wickles Pickles.
We're back on the Bama Beat Podcast brought to you by Wickles Pickles. Go to WicklesPickles.com to learn more about all of their products. Pickles, relishes, okras, a sandwich spread that, spoiler alert, does go well on a breakfast sandwich, as those of you that follow me on Twitter saw not that long ago when Hunter started a campaign with Wickles for a child hunger campaign. If you can make a sandwich in 10 seconds or less, send a video to WicklesPickles.com. They would donate some money. I threw the sandwich spread on a breakfast sandwich with eggs, bacon on brioche. It was a good time. That product and much more at WicklesPickles.com. So complications of a football season in the spring. I mean, first and foremost, it comes down to the players handling the workload of playing a spring season and then, in theory, turning around and playing a normal or close to normal football season in the fall of 2021, and how you're dealing with the players' bodies, and if that is safe to play. Say they were to play a 8-game season in the spring of 2021 and then play a 10-12 game season in the fall of 2021, you're taking college football players who are accustomed to playing 13 football games in a calendar year span. Now they're accustomed. Now you're trying to get them to play closer to 18 or in some cases 19 to 20 in the span of about 8 months. So you're going to have to deal with that. And you'd also have to deal with the NFL draft, because as we've mentioned on previous podcasts, we know the NFL ain't changing one iota of their calendar or their business plan to benefit college football. So you would have some defections to the NFL draft that just wouldn't even play in a spring season. So in terms of talent level, you would probably be getting a watered down season in the spring with some of the top talent opting to just do the draft process instead of playing college football in the spring. Those are two complications just off the top of my head, and there are more, but those are two that come off the top. Do you want to add more complications or add something to those I've already posed?
Well, one of the big questions that I have, because I saw where Purdue's head coach came out and said that, you know, he kind of laid out a plan for Brom is his name, but he came out and laid out what he thinks is a pretty sound plan to execute both the spring season in 2021 and a fall season. And here's the problem that I have with it. The way that he put it was 8 games in the spring, 10 games in the fall. Let's say the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 play in the fall. They get their season knocked out. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 are able to play some sort of spring season. In the fall of 2021, if you play 10 games, 10 regular season games, and the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 all play 12, are you going to be able to be involved in the national championship picture of the college football playoffs? And if not, are you saying that you're willing to push the next chance that you can compete for a legitimate national title to the 2022 season in order to play a spring season now? And how is that going to affect you as far as recruiting is concerned? You can maybe take win percentage or something, or but if you have an 11-1 Big 12 or Big 12 champion, and you have a I don't know that I'm trying to think of a scenario off the top of my head and I can't. But point being, it would be very difficult playing less games to make the argument that if you added two more games, that you would have been able to, have the same record with one loss or zero losses or whatever it ends up being. I just don't think that's going to be feasible asking the committee to kind of weigh those different options with teams playing different games. So is that something I would understand it more from a, if everybody ends up canceling fall sports and everybody played 10 games in the fall of 2021 as well, that would make sense. But am I missing something with that?
I mean, postseason seems almost impossible in pretty much any outlet of a 2020 season, be it happening this fall or happening in the spring of 2021. A postseason seems brutally difficult, especially if you only have three power conferences playing. If all three are able to play and you don't, you can't have a four-team playoff with three conference champions, right? Unless only one of the group of five is able to play, then you could do it that way.
I guess what I'm saying is it's not really for the 2020 season, even though I feel like that if they're pushing on with a season this year, they're going to at least be planning to try to have it some sort of college football playoff, or you just take, you go back to the BCS days, you determine who the best two teams are and you tell them to play for national title. I just think it would be difficult to have all these different conferences playing for essentially what a lot of people would view as nothing, even though, but that's kind of a different, that's not what I'm getting at the overall point here. The point is, you're also, in my opinion, if you plan on playing eight games in the spring of 2021 for your 2020 season, and then you plan on playing 10 games instead of a normal 12 regular season games in the fall of 2021,
right,
aren't you kind of taking yourself out of the picture as far as competing for a national title in the fall of 2021 as well?
How?
Because you would have the Big Ten playing 10 games and the SEC playing 12 regular season games. How do you determine if, let's say they have the Big Ten champion has a better record than the SEC champion, but you can sit there and say, yeah, but the SEC champion played two more games. Who's to say that would be the case if Ohio State had to play that many games, right? When you have two different, it's got to be even, in my opinion, because at that point, who's to say, why don't you just play 10 games and take off a couple of, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure that it's a popular opinion to say just trust the college football playoff selection committee. but I imagine we'd have no other choice.
Yeah.
Like that would have to be, I don't know that there's a way to fairly incorporate that into their decision-making process, right? Like, I don't know that there's a way to fairly accommodate that. You just have to take the resumes for what they are. Like, if the Big Ten deems it safe to only play 10 games, but the SEC feels safer playing 12, you can't really punish Big Ten teams for that. Like, they did it for pandemic reasons. They didn't do it for convenience or anything like that. Now, if things were normal, if COVID-19 was not a thing and the Big Ten was playing a 10-game season, the SEC was playing a 12-game season, then absolutely. You take that into account and say this team gave themselves two more data points and performed well in those data points that you did not. But I don't know that you can easily justify that in this era or for this reason. So I guess you would have no choice but to allow the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to take their resumes for what they are in terms of how much is on that resume. It would just be difficult if, say, in a Big Ten schedule in 2021, if Ohio State were to remove, say, Wisconsin and Minnesota, or Wisconsin and Nebraska from Wisconsin and Iowa from that schedule, and you're removing two decent opponents that could have provided useful data points, which, I mean, Ohio State's had no trouble losing to Purdue by 40 points. So I guess that doesn't really matter how good the team is. They can drop a heinous egg on any given day. That jab aside, I guess you would have no choice but to take the College Football Playoff Selection Committee for what it is, unless you're going to totally overhaul it for both the 2020 and 2021 seasons and try to get back to the current model in 2022. You mentioned it briefly. How would this impact recruiting? Like, not only in the hypothetical that the Big Ten and Pac-12 don't play football in the fall, but the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 do, you would imagine it would be difficult for some of those typically better recruiting brands in the Big Ten and Pac-12 to overcome being more or less invisible for an entire football season, while the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 are incredibly visible, more visible than ever before. You would imagine that would be difficult to overcome. But if everything gets pushed back to the spring, you're also having to finish these highly contested recruiting battles while coaching the season. It's one thing to do it in the current format where you're recruiting during the season, but you at least have some time before the December signing period, and even more before the February signing period, to seal those deals, to go make a couple of in-home visits, to really go on a recruiting blitz for a week or two and see what you can do. But if you're trying to seal the deal in early February when you're going through preseason practice for your season, I imagine that would have some significant impacts on recruiting abilities.
Yeah, and that's a great – and that's kind of – that kind of wraps in a little bit with what I'm saying as far as – and I could be wrong. And more than likely, what you say is exactly what will have to happen if they choose to go that route. But just for me, I'm trying to think, okay, if you – let's say Big Ten, SEC, and ACC all get a team – into the College Football Playoff for 2021, fall of 2021. And then it comes down to a 10-0 Pac-12 champion and an 11-1 or 12-1. I guess it would be 11-0 if the Pac-12, they won a championship. So an 11-0 Pac-12 champion or a 12-1 Big 12 champion, you know, who do you go with in that instance? Because, you know, Big 12 sitting there saying, hey, we got to play two more games. We have one loss, they have zero, but we had to play two more games. You know, and that's what you're saying. You're saying that, you know, you just got to put that on the playoff committee and let them decide. But I would just have a huge gripe because you got to think for the Big Ten's perspective, the Pac-12, they plan on completely screwing over group of five schools for a second year in a row to make this work. They can't be taking those games off their schedule for the fall of 2021 unless that's the route they choose to take. So it would probably be conference games, some of your better opponents. So that's two more opportunities that you could have actually lost. You know, you're not taking off, you know, I don't want to say any teams by name and take any shots, but you get what I'm saying. But if that ends up being the case, and I don't think it will, you know, it's just something that's kind of crept into my mind. I've kind of thought to myself, okay, does that mean that it's possible that the Big Ten and Pac-12 won't be able to compete for a national title until the 2022 season? And if that happens, how would that affect recruiting? And I was like, that would be absolutely detrimental. You know, if you're essentially UCF in this, either whether it be for the spring or for the spring and the fall, essentially saying we're playing a season, but we have no way of actually being, you know, or winning a national championship. I think that, you know, could really, really hurt you And we've already seen the recruiting impact, and we're going to. There's so many dates involved with the calendar and how it falls, whether it be from an NFL draft perspective, when fall camp starts, when the first signing day is. That was specifically put in there for a reason. You've got the second one in February. You've got spring training happening soon after that. The NFL pre-draft process, just the entire thing is set up, and there's not much wiggle room with any of it. And so you got to start figuring out what can you take away. And at this point, I don't think you could change it. I mean, you could try to maybe eliminate the December signing period and just go back to the February, to where, college football recruits can get a chance to see the team that they might be wanting to spend the next three or four years playing for on the field playing. You would have to think that would be an argument, but it's just, it's wild. And there's, and we haven't even really, we haven't even dove into what you originally brought up, which is having to play that many games in one season. And I understand why the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are pushing the health and safety of their players. It's the only play that you have. I've seen speculation about them, trying to unionize the players, and that's why they ultimately kind of turned on a dime and said, we need time to regroup. We don't need to have a season with them threatening this. I've seen that argument. I've seen other arguments as far as the liability. That makes the most sense. That's exactly, in my opinion, what happened here. They didn't want the liability of something happening to one of the players. It's not they're worried about their health and safety, because, you're sending them home and saying, hey, go be in society and let's hope you don't catch it, because whether you catch it on this football field or at home, you still have the myocarditis to worry about, whether you contract, regardless of where you contract it. But go home, that way you can't sue us if you get it. But they're pushing health and safety. That's been the big thing, and they have to, because you can't say, any other reason but health and safety. But by doing that, it's very hard for you to make a pitch to people that you're going to put people's, your players' bodies through that many physical games in one calendar year. So I think that, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth by doing that. And I don't see how you can make that argument, period. So I just, as of right now, there are so many different reasons why I don't think a spring season is a viable option. We'll see if they actually end up trying to make it work. And if they can, I think they're just kicking the can down the road and trying to get their fans. It's very hard right now to cancel your season and tell your fans, we'll see you guys in the fall of 2021. That's just that. I mean, you've already got people in an uproar about it. That's going to cause a huge problem, because then you're talking about close to 2 years without playing a down of football and giving your fans something to watch. I mean, that's I think right now they're just saying, hey, you guys can hold on for 4 more months. We might try to make something happen in the spring. And then after 4 months, they say, you know what? We're not able to make it work. It's just not feasible. But you know what? We're only a few months away from spring ball. And you'll start getting, they're just trying to delay the inevitable.
Do you agree that there isn't a way to fairly punish teams for playing fewer games or reward them for playing more?
Yes.
In terms of a postseason, if something happens, because like in your hypothetical of a 11-0 Oregon Pac-12 champ versus a 12-1 or whatever a Big 12 champ, like people would probably default to saying, well, they played two more games. So if Oregon had played two more games, they would have lost one. It's like you can't say that definitively, because for all you know, the two games Oregon would have added were UCLA and Colorado, and they win both of those games by 35 points. For all you know, the two games they also could have added were regaining that non-conference game against Ohio State and then adding, I don't know, who's good in the Pac-12 South this year? Arizona State?
Yeah, they're supposed to be pretty decent.
What even is the Pac-12 South? Who cares anymore? add Utah and Arizona State onto that schedule, and yeah, they might lose one or both of those games. So you can't just automatically say if you add two games to the schedule, they're going to lose one, because it kind of depends on who the teams are.
Yeah, exactly. But the pitch that's going to be made, because I completely agree with you, and that would be the difficult decision, is how do you weigh that? And at that point, you know, I mean, obviously, if you're a team, can you start saying, you know what, we don't want to play 12 games anymore. We want to play 10. And if we're considered the same for a national championship bid, and baseball's trying to do the same thing kind of right now. They're going a lot more off win percentage, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
What do you mean?
Well, like, you know, the way.
Oh, you mean like the team that have missed games due to COVID?
Yes. Like, yeah, like the standings are based off of win percentage, not your overall record, win loss. So, I mean, that's kind of the world we're already living in with sports. I'm just saying you're going to have people who are attacking it, and it's going to cause a huge problem and a huge headache for the college playoff committee. And at that point, I don't know. I don't think anybody would ever just say, you know what, we're going to start playing 10 games every year then. Because if that, if you want to make that argument, we'd rather not have to throw a couple of these tough games on our schedule, make it a little bit easier, go undefeated, and then we'll make it to the college football playoff based off of, you know, what you're saying. Now, granted, people will say, well, that's a special case because it's, you know, COVID-19 world trying to overcome a global pandemic. It's a mess no matter what. And I'm just trying to think of, okay, what are some of the outcomes that can come of this? And playing in the spring, this is just one outcome that you could more than likely create, and it's going to cause a huge problem. And, you know, you would hope that they would just be ready to say, okay, by the fall of 2021, we need to just be back to normal. Like, that's the plan. We don't need to be playing 10 games and, you know, taking certain things out and switching things around. If that means canceling the spring season in order to make it happen, I think they want to get back to normal as soon as possible and not have this thing lingering for a couple of years. It's just a matter of, you know, you got to weigh the pros and cons, but it's a mess, man.
Yeah, the whole have to be normal by 2021 thing is easier said than done, because if being normal by 2021 means totally punting on 2020, then that's tens and in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars that will, this is not an exaggeration, forever alter what athletic departments look like. Sports cut just rampantly. You've already seen that in small doses around the country, and you would see a lot more of it. Staff hits that seem impossible now would have to be done if that football money doesn't come through. Like, so while it sounds nice to do what needs to be done in 2020 and get things back to normal for September whatever of 2021, these college athletic departments are almost in a case where they can't entirely punt on 2020 just for the benefit of 2021, because if you punt on 2020, your 2021 is automatically not normal. While it might be normal from an epidemiology standpoint, it is absolutely not normal by what's going on in your athletic department financially.
Yes, and mine was more of the statement was made in a more of a combination where you say, well, look, we need to try to get back to normal, and we, for the health and safety of players, that there's just a lot of reasons, that being one of them, want a spring season that isn't an actual viable option. And we'll have to see. I would love for spring to be an option. You know, it would be incredible if you got NFL and ACC, SEC, Big 12 in the fall, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 in the spring sprinkled in with, you know, you're getting some team news as well, because you got to think that, you know, Alabama and Auburn and all those SEC teams and other programs we've already played, they're going through spring like normal. So you'll be getting news, you know, developments with your own team, but you also have actual live football to be watching that means something during a time where you wouldn't normally get it. Right. And then just a couple of months after that, you start getting back into your own team. To me, that would be incredible. I would love for that to be how this all worked out. Even if that meant that whoever, you know, if a team won a national championship in the fall of this season, you always have that asterisk saying, you know, well, Ohio State, who was considered one of, if not the best programs in the country, the projected leader to win the national championship, didn't even play. So you're definitely, it's not going to be That's even if you have a national championship. The point being, I would love for spring football to be a thing for 1 year. I think that would be so much fun. But when you start diving into remaining consistent on your belief that health, the health and safety of your players is the most important thing, it's very hard to argue that is the most important thing to us when you're holding a spring season for the sole purpose of making money, which is exactly what you would be doing. And I get that, you know, I personally agree with that. I think that at this point, I don't want to say that making money is more important than the health and safety of players. I'm not going to go that far. But yes, it's university altering across the board. It's not just athletics. It's, you know, it will carry over in academics, and it will carry over into personal lives and things like that if you don't have a season. So you've got to start wondering, I mean, do we have to put our players a little bit more at risk this year and make them play a few more games? And to say that they wouldn't be able to hold up, I mean, the NFL plays 16 regular season games plus, you know, roughly, what is it? You could play up to, what, 3 playoff games or 4 playoff games? So, you know, it's possible for even though they're a little bit younger, for their bodies to, you know, they won't be in great shape, or I'm not saying it's good, but for it to be possible. But it's tough. It's a tough sell regardless. There's no winning here. You know, you're just trying to figure out, you pick your poison. How do you want to go about football as we know it? You know, you're putting your players at risk, taking huge financial hits. Like I said, there's no winners.
How optimistic are you about SEC football on September 26th?
Oh, that is a tough question. And I'll go ahead and say this. If you're the Big Ten and you're the Pac-12 and you know that you're being severely affected, both financially, but, you know, on top of maybe some of your key players wanting to transfer, guys who weren't just going to be this, you know, here for 1 year. There might be a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau with Oregon who wants to get out and go play somewhere, go and get more college tape out there to try to make himself a, you know, top 5 pick in the future. That's a couple of years that where your program has been affected and you lose a star player. But just with everything going on, plus, you know, recruiting and all that, you want it to be as, what's the word, universal maybe, as possible. Like, if everybody's going through this from a recruiting standpoint, you're if it's just you in the Pac-12, you're hurt. I'm going to go ahead and say right now, I do think over the course of the next couple of weeks, the next several weeks, you're going to see a lot from the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and I wouldn't be, because the NCAA wants it to be universal too. They don't want the split. So, you know, we've already started seeing stuff from some NCAA doctors kind of releasing some stuff saying that they think it's pretty dangerous. I think you're going to get a pretty big effort from those three entities to try to pressure the other three conferences and, you know, other conferences as well, not just the Power Five, but that's, you know, if the Power Five folds, I think everybody's folding. But to push to the spring, or, you know, push to the fall of 2021, because then it's kind of happening to everybody, right? So that's what has me worried. And we'll see. I could be completely wrong. Maybe the Big Ten's like, hey, you know, for the next couple of weeks, they're like, hey, we made the decision we made. If the SEC feels comfortable with it, great for them. Or you could see the Big Ten trying to justify what they've done and saying, man, we just had a bunch of doctors, and they said that there's just no way they put these players at risk, that there's huge risk and liability involved here. And then you're making the SEC and the others look bad, like they don't care about their players. So that's what I'm worried about, is the pressure that's going to be coming from certain people over the course of the next couple of weeks affecting the decisions.
See, I disagree. I think those entities, probably the Big 12 less so than the SEC and the ACC, I think those entities are pretty committed to taking this thing as long as they possibly can. Like, as long as they can justify playing football, I think they're going to give it a shot. I think those conferences, and if I haven't said it multiple times over the last few months, I'll say it again. My opinion is, hello, Cecil. Call you later, man. My opinion is not more valid than anyone else's. I think it's going to play out a lot like the MLB, where they're committed to playing the games and they're going to try everything they can. But when they get outbreaks within teams and you're forced to quarantine significant portions of players, that's when you have to shut down those teams like they had to do to the Marlins and the Phillies and the Cardinals and MLB. And when it comes to a college environment, What is most likely to cause an outbreak within a college football team? Players getting it from average students on campus, right? That's not a stretch, is it?
No, not at all.
So I think that is what is most likely to get in the way of SEC football, ACC football, and Big 12 football, is the student body. I think the student body is the biggest hurdle to clear for those conferences to play football, because it feels like the most likely event is the student athletes get it from common students, be it just by walking around in class or nefarious things that college students do, like parties and whatever. Relations guides that the University of Georgia sent out and then pretty quickly deleted thereafter. just going to leave that there. That seems like what is most likely to cause an outbreak within a college football team, and that's going to shut down a college football team. And if you have several of those popping up over a conference, that's when you have to shut things down. When you have to shut down two or three teams in a 30-team league, it's manageable. When you have to shut down two or three teams in a 14-team league, it gets a lot more drastic in that way. So,
yeah,
that's what I fall. I think the powers that be in those conferences are plenty committed to doing it. I think the biggest hurdle they have to clear is not public opinion, but the spread within their own campuses, which is hilarious because they don't control that.
Yes.
They control a lot of things about their athletic departments and their universities. In some cases, they do not control how the student body acts.
And just to kind of we've kind of gone long here, which is fine. That's what we always do. But just so I'm guessing we're both in agreement here that this could all have been avoided had we just acknowledged that student athletes aren't normal students and, you know, given them the opportunity to kind of put them in a bubble, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. There are some people who are still against that. And at this point, whether you think what they should get, what they shouldn't get, that's not what we're arguing here. Bottom line is they're different than the typical student. We all know that. And if we could just acknowledge that and say, yes, they're more than just amateurs, that would open up a whole can of worms, but it would also, I'm not saying that was what they should have done, but that would have been a solution here to kind of fix what's,
God, don't at us about that. We are not trying to get into that conversation. We're just acknowledging the fact that if they weren't considered amateurs, we could throw them in a bubble and everything.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad you clarified that because I'm not making it an argument one way or the other. I'm just simply saying there was a solution there. It's just not a solution that, you know, that a lot of the top decision makers involved with this wanted to go with. But at the end of the day, there's going to be public pressure. There's going to be outbreaks. And I'm just hoping that by Labor Day, that are not necessarily Labor Day, but sometime in early September, they get, the initial spikes, they're able to kind of get it under control. It's not carrying over as much maybe to the football programs as they thought that it would or something like that. And that, you know, that it starts giving them some encouraging signs that they can make this happen. I hope that ends up being the case. There's still a lot of obstacles to overcome, but I think that's going to wrap it up. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I'm good. I need to call Cecil back.
Yeah. Don't need to leave him waiting. All right, Brent. Well, I appreciate you hopping on here with me, brother. Always good talking to you. This is a huge topic. It's going to affect college football regardless for, a very long time. So appreciate you taking some time out of your day. We'll do it again soon. This has been the Bama Beat Podcast brought to you by Wickles Pickles.
Cecil texted me. Apparently, Burn is doing a Zoom at 1:30 today, so I need to.